The content of this show is subject to contain sensitive language and explicit content intended for mature audiences only. So, as of right now, it's not echoing, right?
Talk again.
As of right now, it is not echoing, right, Tori? Kind of hoping that we'd get a nice little end of the world after that. But
But like live, laugh, toast, or bath.
I've considered slipping into a bathtub while blow drying my hair.
Delulu is the Salulu.
So this is it. We're gonna end up right there with those statistics we've been talking about. Tori and I are breaking up.
You were my cup of tea, but I'm a coffee drinker now.
You're now tuning in to season 2, episode 7 of the Trigger Warning Podcast. If you did happen to miss my Instagram post about this, then you must not be following our Instagram platform. So please tuck your tail in between your legs because that is shameful as hell. My Instagram post was an FYI that if you're watching or listening to our episodes and stop listening or watching at the point where our platform link page appears, as a subtle reminder to subscribe to our channel. And for those of you that are listening to the episodes and not watching, I'm talking about the part at where you start hearing the typing noise. If you stop there, you are missing additional clips that I typically add into the outros of the episodes. These clips are typically pre-recorded clips of discussions we have that may flow into the episode as added bonus footage, or they may be bloopers. I hope you haven't missed those because they are pretty great. And I'm not just saying that because I'm the one that clips them together and edits them in, because let's be real, I am never impressed by anything that I do. So I wouldn't be saying that this is great just because I do it. There are, however, some clips that I do have to edit out and replace for the audio uploads for distribution to all of the audio platforms, because some of those edits just would not be understood audibly and best understood if you're actually watching the episode.
Personally, I think the bloopers are my favorite, which we already had a couple today. But I think I watch those more times than I watch our actual show. I watch our show like, okay, yeah, I love it, great. And then I'm over here replaying the Instagram reels and the things you send me because they're just funny, because we're hilarious.
I do the exact same thing. Once I watch the full episode when it's uploaded on YouTube, to make sure that my several sessions of watching it over and over and over and over and over before uploading, actually, I didn't miss anything, those 1,000 times. And then after that, I fast forward and just keep watching either the funny intros or the funny outros of it, because they are, like I said, pretty good.
They're hilarious.
Tori, I literally could have just clipped out the intro and the beginning of the last episode right into this episode because Jesus Christ, dude, I have not been able to fully comprehend a goddamn thing that's happening with my life or anything surrounding me. Like, not at all. I need a personal narrator or subtitles, for Christ's sakes. And even if that came as an option, I still probably wouldn't comprehend it. And honest to the gods, I cannot stand subtitles at all. I actually need to know exactly whose hands have been holding my life in them. And when I find that out, I need to speak to their supervisor. Then I'm going to need to speak to their supervisor's supervisor. This isn't going to be like the last episode where I vaguely touch on shit going on in my life and give just about zero information as to actually what's going on. I know there are people, because I would be one of these people, that would be listening to something like that and think, why in the hell would she even bring this up if she's not going to explain what's going on? But full transparency here, I still do not know where my mental stability lies. Like, I am at the tip of an iceberg that is melting, but also somehow managing to jump to the tip of another iceberg before I'm the one that I'm on melts away. Eventually, there is not going to be any goddamn icebergs left because global warming, right?
Yes.
Then what? No idea. But I promise you that somehow, and I have no clue as to how, I am still standing. I almost think that one of the demons within me is actually so attached to my soul that it's holding me up out of love. I promise you right now, I will never, ever again allow somebody to tell me that what does not kill you makes you stronger. Bullshit. Things that haven't quite killed me have not made me stronger. In fact, I wonder why in the hell those things did not kill me. Seriously, if anybody ever tells me that again, I have to just say, piss off. I should never have to go through things that don't quite kill me in order to make me stronger. I am strong because I haven't killed me.
Well, you know what Kelly Clarkson always says? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
So what, you're telling me that I have to message Kelly Clarkson and tell her to piss off? Is
Yeah,
that what
specifically,
you're
actually.
saying?
Yeah, I'm
Okay.
asking you. But for real, I am more hung up on the fact that you don't like subtitles because I am a subtitle girly and I cannot watch my shows without subtitles. I don't know what's going on. I can't focus. I truly do wish that I had subtitles in real life because, as you know, I'm hard of hearing in this ear and I'm constantly like, huh? What? Huh? Like, I need subtitles, so it really bothers me that you don't even like them.
Well, I know I'm going deaf too. And I mean, I turn my TV on loud. And that doesn't make it any better, but we both have ADHDs, right? So tell me how in the hell you can watch the episode while looking at the subtitles at the same time. Do your eyes go both directions? 'Cause if
Yeah,
I'm
they're
reading,
just like,
yeah.
oh, I didn't
If I'm reading a subtitle while trying to watch the episode, I can't read it fast enough for it to comprehend what is going on. I'm missing the show.
I get that, and I've actually had people say that to me. I'm a really fast reader, for one, so I think that has something to do with it. But I don't know. If I don't have subtitles on, I'm confused. I don't know what's happening in the show. I have to have subtitles. I can't handle it. I don't know what's happening because I didn't hear anything.
I guess I've said this time and time and again, you're just weird.
I know.
One of those weird people that need subtitles.
Okay.
The audience does want to hear more from you now because I've been bitching enough and stabbing you and
I
taking
understand.
several stabs at you at this point. Give me what you got going on.
Oh man. Well, fall has officially started, which means that fall sports have started, and we now have dance class one night a week and basketball practice 5 days a week. Busy season for farming is in absolute full swing. So my husband Ian is working from dawn until well after dusk now, and I ordered pizza for dinner tonight because I was like, I don't even need the stress. I have so many Casey's points. This is a free pizza. I'm doing it. But I'm also thinking about upping my meds, you know? But then again, I know that my insanity is what gets me through the fall and winter months. Like somehow it's almost a pro in my life that I'm a little bit, not all there. But my oldest daughter had a dance recital this past weekend, and she has been doing Irish river dancing and Celtic dancing, and she absolutely killed it. She has moved up in a class that is 9 to 12 year olds, and she is not 9 to 12, so we are very, very proud of her. She's doing amazing. And then our 12-year-old won his last football game, which was the last of the season. So his football season is officially over, and they won their last game, which was very, very fun. And then, to top it all off, my wonderful mother ended up having to have an emergency appendectomy last week. That word is very hard for me, but an emergency appendectomy. And as moms are, she really just thought she had a cold, and it turned into an appendicitis. But my daughters were like, let's make grandma a get well video while she's in the hospital. I'm like, oh, that is so sweet. Yeah. So we start doing that. And my oldest is just sweet as pie, saying the nicest things. And we're talking about how, get well, grandma. We hope your appendix is better, blah, blah, blah. Okay. They didn't understand the whole it was removed thing. And I said, yeah, good thing it didn't burst. And my sweet, sweet 4-year-old daughter says, well, if it exploded, she would have been dead in the middle of the get well video. So I sent it to my mother because that was really funny. So it's
That
going.
is actually hilarious. Or is that possible? Like, if it explodes, is that a possibility?
Oh
Like
yeah,
you.
'cause you can get sepsis and then you can become septic and you can like die. But yeah, hers did not explode, but she really was.
Well, thank goodness.
Yeah, she really wanted to make sure Grandma knew what would happen if it
And
did.
crazy that she knew that, to even say that. She's smart.
She scares
She's so
me.
smart. You've got a lot going on, but your kids are thriving, it sounds like.
Always.
And I'm loving every second of it, honestly. When you give me the updates on the kids and everything else, aside from the sad things of stress and your mom's appendix almost exploding, almost.
She would have been dead.
Yeah, exactly. But I love receiving those updates because I don't get to actually see that until you talk to me while we're filming. So it's a lot of fun. But yeah. I'm going to tell you what's going on in my life.
I can't wait. This is my favorite.
Outside of my typical bitch fest in the very beginning, because that is always necessary, right? It just kicks it all off right away. I stayed at my mother's last Thursday with both my brother and my sister there too. It was just absolutely necessary for all of us to be there together that day and stay the night together. This was the first time we all stayed the night in the same place since I moved out of the dual apartment that we were living in with my mom about 8 years ago. But that is besides the point. My sister keeps herself heavily invested in what's going on in the world of artists, music-wise, and the whole P. Diddy thing. Stays updated on sports players. She's heavily into sports. And basically, what I'm saying here is that she is in the know of it all. Whereas I am not. Yes, my platform feeds are filled with info on Diddy and that situation, but I have not had the patience or ability to sit there and figure out everything going down and who all is about to go down with this. But I do know for certain Eminem will not be going down for anything because my man has been blasting the hell out of Diddy for years. In fact, at least at the very least, two full albums could be created solely based on songs Eminem has blasted Diddy in. My sister, she wanted to know who my top favorite rappers are. She knew I could skip over number one. I was, in all honesty, it was really hard to figure that out. like what rappers were in my top five because like it just doesn't get better than him, you know?
Yeah, totally.
In my opinion. And I had to keep, because of a lot of things being going down in the Diddy situation, I had to keep giving her names of rappers and saying, are we mad at him or her for any reason? Because I can't keep up. And I would give a name, ask that so many times to the point where she said, sis, listen to me. This is going to be solely based off of their music, most likely the music they made many years ago before anything would have come out about them, come out of the woodworks. That did make it a little bit easier. So I did say Lil Wayne in the aspect of the peak of his music career, right? My sister proceeds to tell me her top five. And I shit myself when this girl, she is a woman, but I still call her a girl, said Eminem was her number one favorite rapper on her top five. All I could think of is I have been bowing down to this man as my God for more than half my existence, and you're just now telling me he is in the top, he is number one in the top five of your favorite rappers, and I did not know this. With as much as I talk to her, talk to you, talk to Mike, talk to anyone I cross paths with in my life, she has never once told me that this is her, he's number one on her top five list.
The
That was
betrayal.
some, I know. That was a moment where I truly felt this deep connection in the black holes of our souls. Now, I did not mean for that to rhyme, but at least it is documented in case I do want to start a rap career. Not saying right now I will, but I might have to in the future. I had never been more proud of anything that's ever come out of my sister's mouth. Then she proceeds to say, Lil Wayne is number two. And Tori, at this point, I was mind, and I don't have the blooper thing
Yeah.
pulled up to bloop me out, bleep me out, bleep, not bloop,
Bloop.
bleep. So mine F-bombed. I said, are you just telling me this right now because you think this is what I want to hear? She said, no, if it weren't for you, I would have never known Lil Wayne at the peak of his music career. And then I was like, yep, you are speaking facts right there, sis. And my sister and I had a terrible, and I mean terrible, relationship growing up. My mom always told me we'd grow out of it because we're sisters. I was absolutely certain that would never happen. But she was right. As we grew up and became adults, we really started to understand each other on levels we'd never been able to before. I am telling you, though, when the words I have Eminem listed as my number one, I just, that was like, you know, maybe we're best friends. Maybe. Rap is not by any means her favorite genre, but my sister knows her music. She knows her artists. And if a song comes on the radio, all it takes for her is to listen to the three first words of the lyrics, and she knows what song it is and who sings it. She is literally that Shazam app that people download on their phones to record a song in order to get the title of the song, right? So now I'm convinced she is the app, or she created the app and is the one listening to the music and delivering the titles.
Could be it.
If you're actually curious to know my top five outside of Eminem and Lil Wayne, because I covered both of them, I guess I could have really summed up two to five as the artist in the Young Money. If we're talking about artists back in their prime, if you have no idea what Young Money is or who Young Money consisted of, that is tragic for you. I am so sorry you did not get to be a part of the Young Money era.
I don't really listen to rap. I know this actually feels like a stab in your cold black heart, But I could tell you my favorite, like, heavy and death metal artists.
Go ahead.
No, I don't want to. Eminem is the best rapper of all time because of, like, spaghetti or whatever.
Yeah.
I love messing with you.
That's why. You did, in fact, used to listen to rap. I mean, a
Not much,
Millie,
but yeah, okay.
a Lil Wayne, dude, a Millie, we'd be upstairs in your bedroom, first song, a Millie, a Millie, a Millie, a Millie, like,
Every
come
word.
on. Seriously.
That in the car, Selena, okay? I had to take our oldest to a doctor's appointment. And so it's just him and I. He's almost 13, so he listens to all sorts of rap. And I'm just like, I don't care, it's music, it's a great expressive outlet. Well, I had it on shuffle, and that happens to be a liked song, and it came on, and like I don't know what came over me. I just started rapping every word, and he's just thoroughly concerned for my well-being and probably his as well as I'm driving, just rapping a Millie. And he's like, can we change it? This is like 90s.
Did he? Oh, I was just about to say, did he know the song?
Nope. No,
It's
he did
funny
not.
because what I imagine right there is that song coming on, you putting on a cap and switching it backwards
Yeah.
and just start rapping. Your rap
Yep.
career was in that moment
I'm
right
pretty
there.
sure I took my hands off the steering wheel and like threw my hair back out of my way. I'm pretty sure that happened.
I'm picturing it so vividly right now. In other news, back to what seems like many moons ago, I was invited to be a guest on a podcast called Young Dad Pod, hosted by Jay Young. Very clever, right? His last name being Young, he's a dad. Wow. I
Very,
just
very
not put
clever.
that together in my head, to be quite honest. This was the first opportunity I had to be a guest on a podcast, so of course I was all for it. This episode was shot many months ago. I believe it was shot towards the end of season one or during our break before season two. If or when, I should say, you do watch or listen to this episode, but watch if you do watch it, you'll see that it most definitely was shot a while back. Just by looking at my podcast setup, my light quality, it's pitiful to look at from my perspective today. The episode aired on Tuesday, September 24th. In the episode, we discussed topics such as maternal and paternal mental health, not labeling yourself as your mental illness, not using your mental health disorders as an excuse for shitty behavior, and in order to get to the how, you have to figure out the why. To be completely honest with you, because this episode was shot so long ago and then released just at the end of last month, I had no idea from the start of it. I literally had no idea what to prepare for because I had never been a guest. Jay told me to bring whatever I felt was worth discussing, but my brain certainly blanked on every aspect. Like, it could have been like, duh, Selena, talk about what your podcast is about. That's probably what he wants you on there for. But no, I was like, I asked him, I said, what do you want me to bring? And I'm used to a structured episode with segments that I know I'm going to be discussing, and that was not the case with this guest appearance. So by the time the episode aired, I thought, oh, good gods, or more accurately, oh, good Eminem. What did I bring to the table for this episode? I was certain I brought the worst version of myself, did not make a single statement that made any sense, and that Jay would actually not air the episode and regret inviting me altogether. But I watched it. It was better than I expected. I did not bring a lot of meat to the table, but Jay is a wonderful podcast host, and he really elaborated on many things that I said in ways I couldn't because my brain and my mouth are not being managed by the same cells. His perspective on things really opened my eyes to many things I really would have never thought of. You will find the episode I'm referring to on the Young Dad Pod, labeled as 167, Addressing Maternal and Paternal Mental Health. I will link the Young Dad Pod to this episode's notes, include his YouTube and his other platforms so that you can like, share, subscribe, follow, and engage. Jay, thank you so much for inviting me to be on your show as a guest. You really helped me lay my foundation for when future podcast guest opportunities present themselves. Because now I know, duh, they're gonna know what your podcast is about and why you created it.
Exactly.
So this episode is not going to be like most of our episodes. We have been real, we have been raw, we've spoken our own truths, we've been factual, we've discussed some hard-hitting topics, and provided promised resources. When we talk about our struggles with our mental health disorders and we share our personal experiences, then show you where we're at today based on where our journey has led us, we're really only opening up a sliver of the truth behind many of the things we discuss within our own experiences. At the end of the shows, we often provide you with what resources you should expect to see listed based on the episode topics, segments with each show. It's possible from an outside perspective, it can seem as though we are ending our stories in a positive aspect and providing promising results based on how we represent ourselves in a way of a look at us, we did it kind of manner. And when we provide you with those resources, it could be interpreted as if we're telling you these resources will save your life. If you've watched or listened to our show and found yourself feeling that way based on how we've presented ourselves as we've spoken on our truths, then follow up with closing the episodes out by stating which resources we will provide in a way that seems as though we are telling you that if you use them, they will work. I'm very sorry. The truth is, we cannot promise you that those resources will help you. We can only promise you that you will not know unless you try. Tori and I do not sit here every 2 weeks explaining the details of our own personal experiences to connect with our audience with the intent of representing that you will overcome what we have in the same ways. Nor do we want to imply that the resources available will in fact save your life. When I sit down to record each episode, my intent here is to deliver hope and instill faith. I want to be your proof and give you back the hope that you can make it out alive. Realistically speaking, all that I can really be is proof that it is possible. I can sit here and tell you time and time again that the brain that is trying to kill you is the same brain that is capable of keeping you alive. When I do make that statement, I am stating a fact. What I cannot promise you is that just because I made it out alive, and the fact that I am sitting here telling you how I made it, means that you too will make it out alive. It is time for us to cut into those slices so deep we're going to be showing you the bones. You do not have to have major depressive disorder, bipolar disorder, ADHD, panic disorders, borderline personality disorder, or any other mental health disorder to experience a severely traumatic depressive episode. There are people that can and do experience major depressive episodes without any mental health diagnosis.
This is something that I can actually attest to. My husband, who has been blessed with a perfectly working brain and no diagnosed mental health disorders, did have a bit of a depressive episode back in February. We truly have no idea where it came from, but he was experiencing severe, in his case, depression and anxiety. And it was made worse by the fact that he had never felt those specific feelings before. And he was at a total loss. I was at a total loss. And truly, we both did not know what to do because this was not like him. And it was very hard. But he was able to open up to me and we got through it together. But it just shows that no one is immune to mental health, even though he went 28 years without having any sort of issue.
Exactly. And that happens to quite a bit of people. The truth behind what's really going on when you are going through a major depressive episode are many things people do not want to talk about. They might find the truth to be embarrassing, shameful, pathetic. Many people don't feel like others will relate to their experiences at such a deep level during the peak of a major depressive episode. I know from experience, if you share the raw, honest truth behind it all, you have no idea how somebody is going to react. There will be people who will judge you for what you couldn't do in those moments. There will be people who believe you could have prevented it from getting that bad. There will be people that just won't understand or comprehend what you really went through. I've shared a lot of different experiences relating to my own personal struggles with my mental health, from manic episodes, self-mutilation, anxiety, depression, all the way through how I planned out taking my own life to the very last detail, and what stopped me at that very last second of what I thought was the end of my life. In the last episode, I touched on how I was thrown into severe major depressive episodes, then manic episodes, and then back into severe major depressive episodes. Now I'm going to speak on the truth behind those major depressive episodes. I cannot tell you how many days I simply could not get out of bed outside getting up to go to the bathroom, then getting right back into bed. I actually have a clip on my TikTok account that I made with just a glimpse into how many times I responded to friends or family members explaining my delay or lack of response was because I was asleep.
I woke up from the nap to get things done, but you know what I did instead? I took another nap. It was a very good nap. That email, I took a nap. The Zoom call.
I could not even bother to get myself out of bed to get something to drink. I severely dehydrated myself. My personal hygiene suffered excessively. I was not able to get out of bed to drink anything. Therefore, I certainly wasn't going to get out of bed to shower, brush my teeth, change my clothes, do my hair, put makeup on, etc. I am a complete lunatic when it comes to my daily skincare regimen, both day and night. And I really need you all to understand how dedicated I am to my skincare regimen at this point. It is important to know because I was not even capable of getting out of bed to do something I have always done religiously since I was about 12 years old. So, to get you to really understand this level, I have accumulated over the years legitimate professional skincare tools that cost me a lot of money from professional skincare websites. And I hope that helps you understand that I take my skincare regimen so seriously, and that in the level of personal hygiene, that's something I would do over anything typically. I went days without eating a single thing. Mike would try to get me to eat, and I simply just could not get up to eat. I either never had an appetite or nothing sounded appealing enough to consume. As much as I hate to admit this, I was not taking my medications in the way that I should have been. If I was awake at the time, I'd usually take my daytime medications, but It was never on a consistent basis throughout the entirety of my depressive episodes. At this point, it might be easy for anyone to say, well, there's your first problem. No, that was not the first problem at all. Up to the point, right before falling into that kind of depression, I took my medication regimen very seriously. The first severe depressive episode I had fallen into happened soon after I started seeing my psychiatrist that I still see to this day. After my first appointment with my psychiatrist, I made a promise to myself that no matter what, I was not going to give up on my medications in the ways that I had many times in the past. I took that promise so seriously because I knew by that point I trusted my psychiatrist, and if I did not trust the process, I would not make it. I was building a brand new regimen while also weaning off medications I'd been prescribed by other healthcare providers that I should not have been on. I followed my psychiatrist's very detailed instructions on how I needed to wean off those medications I had been on, as well as the very detailed instructions to build on my new regimen. So I'm going to say it again. Not taking my medications correctly did not lead me down the hole I spiraled into. Sure, maybe the fact that I wasn't taking my medications properly each day while going through this very well could have prolonged my ability to overcome that episode sooner, but I can't go back and change it now to figure that out. But also important to mention, when I did come out of that first deep depressive episode, I did get right back into my religious medication management, yet still spiraled again later after my manic episode ended. I was losing so much weight from not being able to eat, which for some people in a depressive episode, it could be the opposite of that. I was watching the fear build up in Mike as time went on, and he had no idea what he could do to help me. If I was not sleeping, I would typically be awake during the late night or early mornings between midnight and 3 a.m. That did happen a lot because I'd spend the entirety of most of my days sleeping so that I did not have to bear the idea of being alive, because I did not want to be alive. During those episodes, it's very common for individuals to sleep so much because being awake is a constant reminder of the darkness that is suffocating you. When I would find myself awake during those late nights and early mornings, I'd be in the bathroom floor crying hysterically and puking from the pain in my brain. Again, I did not intend for that to rhyme, but I'm really feeling a rap career kicking in right about now. I wasn't even eating or drinking anything to have enough to puke up, but was still puking from the mental and physical pain the depression was putting my body through. If I wasn't in the bathroom, I was either curled up on my kitchen floor bawling while my dog was trying to comfort me, or here in this podcast room that was not a podcast room at the time, laying on the beanbag I have in here bawling and trying to find my reason to keep going. The more I searched for that reason, the more I felt myself losing the battle. The self-harm amplified. There were many days I felt the urge to finally end the suffering by taking my life, but without a plan to do so. The only reasons that I actually probably kept myself alive during those moments was because I did not want to risk the possibility of my life being able to be saved. I wanted to make sure that my attempt to end my life would be successful. I was competent enough to understand that those intense urges to end my life right then and there in those moments could have been unsuccessful, and I would not have been grateful or seen it as some sort of miracle. I know that I would not be grateful to have seen that my attempt at suicide had failed. I was in far too deep to have considered that to be a blessing. I'm not about to say this because it's a national resource that at this point, either you've heard us tell you about, seen us share information about on our platforms, seen it on other platforms, or because it's a resource listed at the top of our list on our resources page on our website. I'm saying this because it is the truth. I used the 988 text line on at least three different occasions. However, I was competent enough to know that when they asked that question, are you suicidal? Do you have a plan to take your own life? Or anything in that aspect. They have to ask those questions up front. Even though the answer was yes, I said no. I knew that had I answered yes to those questions, they would dispatch emergency responders. In those moments, that's not what I felt like I needed. I needed to talk to them because I was trying so hard to hide the worst of it from everyone else, including Mike. Mike was already in a state where he felt so hopeless, so during the late nights and early mornings, he'd be asleep and I'd be awake. That's when the worst of it all would really occur. I wanted to hide the worst of it all from him to the best of my ability. He could not have helped me no matter what, and because he is the way that he is, he wouldn't accept that even when he was not witnessing the worst of it. I cannot tell you that it was right for me to lie to them. I can't tell you that I was certain I did not need to be hospitalized in that moment. All I can tell you is I needed them to listen, and that's exactly what they did. They listened. They did what they were trained to do, which was respond to me in ways that would help me feel safer. They held conversations with me that were intended to redirect my brain's way of thinking in those moments. They checked in pretty quickly after a certain length of delayed response time on my end. They continued texting me until I told them I'd felt better and that I was ready to go back to bed. During all three of those occasions, I found myself texting the crisis support line. I knew I needed to make sure they wouldn't send emergency responders to my house because, again, I knew that in those moments, that's not what I wanted the outcome to be. I just knew I needed to speak to a stranger about what I felt like I couldn't speak to anyone else about. They did the same thing every single time. They did not ask the same questions outside of the suicide-related question. They did not seem to be following a script, nor did they come off with no lack of urgency in the matter after I answered the suicide question in a way that I knew they would not dispatch emergency responders. They still maintained that urgency in how they followed up to support me because regardless, I was still texting a crisis hotline. So the situation was still deemed as a crisis situation. They were genuine, and it was evidently clear I was talking to a real person each time. I cannot tell you that I'm alive to tell this story today because I used the crisis hotline. I'm pretty confident in the fact that that is not the reason that I'm still alive. Because those nights that I was awake feeling completely destroyed mentally and physically happened on more than just those three occasions. It was just a constant occurrence during the worst of my depressive episodes. I just so happened to remember that my therapist gave me a card with a list of those crisis support lines. And I do remember that the three nights I did contact the crisis support line were three nights out of many where it was either a matter of waking Mike up on a weeknight and that he knowing that he did have to work the next morning, but knowing I could not pull myself together to even explain to him what was wrong, nor could I tell him what I needed, or text the hotline. So I chose the hotline because I could not even begin to try to explain to anyone what kind of help I actually needed when I didn't know myself.
I have never had the depth of depression that you have experienced. I know you hate to hear it, but you truly are one of the strongest people I know. My depressive episodes mainly happen like during the winter months and can be deemed as seasonal affective disorder, but my main mental health issues are normally ADHD and anxiety. So I cannot relate to you as much with those depressive episodes, but I do know that we have a lot of listeners that hopefully can. However, I do tend to experience moderate depression, again, more during the cold, dark months. I mean, who wouldn't? It's cold and dark. And in a given year, about 5% of the United States population experiences seasonal affective disorder. And the acronym for that is SAD. And I do not know who came up with that name, but it spells sad. And you're going to tell me that somebody, some professional, was like, you know what? The winter months, you're sad. Why don't we call it seasonal affective disorder? It gets me every time. It makes my depression this much better. All of the information for this disorder can be found on the Mental Health America website, which we can link. Additionally, 4 out of 5 people who suffer from SAD are women between the ages of 20 and 30. I do know that I can call it SAD, but I will be calling it SAD for the rest of the episode. Typically, the further from the equator you are, the more likely and the higher chance you have to experience SAD or SAD, which makes sense. I do not think that I would be nearly as depressed if I was on a beach with a palm tree close by. But all jokes aside, it is a very serious disorder that can cause a tremendous amount of depression and depression-like symptoms. The reduced levels of sunlight in the fall and winter months can affect our serotonin levels. And unfortunately, the effect on an individual's serotonin, which is, as we all know, or some of us are very familiar with, it is a neurotransmitter that affects mood. Lower levels of serotonin are linked to depression. Higher levels of a serotonin transporter protein that removed serotonin in individuals did not have seasonal depression, so it is corresponding there. And unfortunately, melatonin, a wonderful thing that our bodies produce naturally, is a sleep-related hormone, and it is secreted by a gland in the brain that has also been linked to seasonal depression. So this hormone, which affects our sleep and our mood and different sleep patterns, is produced when we are in increased levels of dark. So when our days are shorter and darker, the production of this hormone increases. So melatonin is affecting what some people might call the biological clock or the circadian rhythm, which really is just our sleep and wake schedules. And unfortunately, if that gets out of sync, it can totally throw somebody off and spiral them into a depressive state. But seasonal affective disorder is very similar to your regular, what I call run-of-the-mill depression, what everybody thinks they know about depression. And you have touched on that. We've both touched on that, the different signs and symptoms of that. And that is the same with seasonal affective disorder. But the unfortunate thing is, it's still there, even if it is seasonal. In my deepest SAD episode, I was unable to get out of bed for a few days. It wasn't nearly as long as some people have experienced, but it was over Christmas break, and I was heavily relying on my husband at this time to keep our house and everything afloat. This was absolute torture for me. If you know me, I am so used to running the show, making sure everything is perfect and in running order, and I just could not fathom not being able to do that, but at the same time, unable to pull myself out of bed, which just made my depression that much worse. I cried for no reason. I was taking naps more than I could count. I was laying in bed. I was not getting out of bed, and this was killing me in a way that wasn't actually killing me. But it was my favorite time of the year. Christmas is my all-time favorite holiday. And I cannot tell you what pulled me out of that episode, but my meds were being taken as directed. Nothing else had changed. Everything was the same. But suddenly one day it was like my body finally decided enough was enough. And I pulled myself out of bed, and I put my snow pants on, and I went outside with my kids. And all I can think is, what would have happened had I not? And that is something that has always really stuck with me.
I'm glad you touched on that, especially, you know, that time period is coming up. I've talked about seasonal depressive disorder and how that can get so severe that it can also cause a psychotic episode, from that to mania to a psychotic episode. So your emphasis on how severe it is, so severe. But I could not help myself but to smile and giggle inside at the fact that I had no idea that it was SAD. S-A-D.
It is.
I did not put that together in any moment that I have ever discussed that disorder, but that is perfect.
I love it. Perfect. It brings me joy.
Yes.
So I just cannot wait. Well, I can for my next seasonal depressive episode. And I know my little ADHD brain, I'm going to be like, I'm sad. And then I hopefully it cures me.
I want to be able to tell somebody that asks what's wrong. What's wrong? I'm sad. And then they're like, okay, no, I have sad. And they're like,
I am sad.
Now you're just grammatically stupid. So there's more than just sad wrong with you. But I'm going to end it there because
it's great.
Yeah, I am stupid,
happy.
Depression is absolutely debilitating, and do not ever let a single person tell you otherwise. Despite what Tori just said, depression doesn't just look like sadness. Depression isn't just crying all the time. Depression isn't just something you can snap out of by getting up, exercising, eating, drinking enough water, or whatever bullshit advice people try to feed you because they either believe they understand what you're going through or they have no idea but try to act like they do. Depression is not having the ability to concentrate. It leaves you in this constant state of guilt and feeling lost beyond belief. It's a loss of interest in things you once found interesting or desirable. It's losing hope and faith in your ability to do things you know you're otherwise capable of doing. It's losing sight of the reasons that were once keeping you alive by flipping those thoughts upside down and giving you all the reasons why you should not be alive. It is gut wrenching anxiety about what's to come next. Every time you wake up, you're reliving the same nightmare over and over again. I researched psychiatric hospitals numerous times throughout my depressive episodes. I read reviews, and they immediately led me to believe I was better off suffering at home, even if the outcome were to be death by suicide. At one point, I did go to the hospital that my psychiatrist is a provider at, but is an outpatient provider, not an inpatient provider. Though they do offer inpatient services, they can never guarantee a room or bed will be available and that I wouldn't have to be transferred to another facility. At the point where I was sitting in the emergency room after my blood had been taken, I'd taken a drug test. At least I assume that's what it was. Either way, I know I pissed in a cup. I was told I had to wait for a doctor to come in and let me know if they had any beds available in their inpatient psychiatric care unit. During that time, they had left the door open for the sole purpose to monitor me and make sure they could act and respond immediately if I were to self-harm or anything of the sort while waiting. The receptionist's desk was right in front of my room. I laid there with my eyes closed, but knew I was not going to be able to fall asleep. The many times I opened my eyes, I'd find either the receptionist staring in at me or visitors. It was very clear that these were visitors, not doctors of any sort, looking into my room with each passing, and actually a couple of them several times. I was already so uncomfortable. My anxiety was not controlled, even though they administered lorazepam via IV into my system. And I was terrified that they were going to come back and tell me they didn't have any availability and I'd have to be sent to another facility. I couldn't bear the sheer thought of ending up in a facility that would ruin me instead of help me. None of the facilities, even remotely close to where I am located, had any substantial reviews. In fact, there was a review where a father had reported that his daughter was far worse once she returned home from that specific facility than when she was when she went into the facility for treatment, and that his daughter had taken her life shortly after being released. I couldn't bear the idea of being that far away from my family or my husband. As more time passed, I made the decision that I needed to leave. I pushed the button to alert the nurse. Once the nurse arrived, I asked to be released and stated I did not want to be put into inpatient care, no matter whether beds were available or not. The only reason I had been able to make that decision to leave and actually was allowed to leave is because, once again, when I was asked that very specific suicide-related question, I did not tell the truth. Therefore, I could not be placed under inpatient psychiatric care without my full consent. I did have to follow up with speaking to a therapist connected to the hospital via telehealth, and they had to approve my release based on my own free will by asking me questions to determine whether or not I was at risk of harming myself or others. But I knew how to answer those questions so that I could get the hell out of there. I spent too many hours waiting in that emergency room, which only allowed for the worst case scenario thoughts to overwhelm my brain and throw me into full flight mode. At that point, I just wanted to go home, take my medications, and go to bed. I just needed to sleep and turn it all off. I did go home. I did go right to bed. So in summary of that, no, the crisis hotline did not save my life. Inpatient treatment did not save my life because obviously I did not end up being admitted. There were a lot of moments where I did feel I'd lost all control, but I know I didn't because I was competent enough to know what I did and what I didn't want. And what I felt like I did or didn't need in specific situations. I knew I did not want to be alive, but at the same time, I knew I did not want to react on impulse and end up with a failed attempt at taking my life. However, I do not condone lying to anyone trained to help you through a crisis situation. No matter whether or not you feel like you still have some sense of control to know what you need out of a situation and what you don't want the outcome of a situation to be, the fact is that I could have been wrong, or I could have actually lost whatever control I felt I was still holding on to at any given moment, and you could too. I scared myself into believing that had I gone to a psych facility for inpatient psychiatric treatment, I would not have come out in better shape than I went in. Unfortunately, there are far too many scary reviews on Google, especially with these state-run facilities. I felt better off trying to win the battle with the possibility of the outcome being that I'd end up taking my own life over seeking that kind of care. What I can tell you is that my sister has gone to two psych facilities at two different periods in her life. Both of those times resulted in successful outcomes in terms of how she was treated and how much better she felt when she was released. The first facility she was sent to was hours away from home, and I was terrified for her. When she was released, she said it was the best decision she made because she knew what would have happened if she did not make that decision. She was so well taken care of and had not a bad word to say. Her sense of mental stability was restored. The second facility she went to is located within a hospital in our area, and the inpatient psychiatric unit had literally just been built. I had very little hope for that one, as this hospital has never been well known for providing great mental health care services. But once again, the outcome was exactly what she needed it to be. She is now receiving proper care and treatment for her mental health, and I couldn't tell you how many years it's been since her last day in an inpatient psych facility. So I had no intentions of scaring anyone away from that kind of treatment. I instilled the fear in myself. My sister's experiences proved me wrong. I believe that my sister is so strong because of the decision she made to seek that kind of treatment to save her life, especially considering for many people, the thought of being admitted into a psych facility is terrifying. So this is for my sister. Sis, thank you for being brave enough to do something that I couldn't even do. Thank you for allowing your experience to bring back that hope and faith in having to seek out that kind of treatment with the result of a successful outcome. What actually did save my life was that my brain did exactly what it was always capable of doing. During what I thought were my final moments, my brain flipped on me. After feeding me all the reasons why I shouldn't be alive for so long, I suddenly started feeling and visually seeing every single reason why I should be alive. I was going to take my life exactly how I planned to do it, without the opportunity for my life to be saved, guaranteed. For obvious reasons, I cannot share what my plan was. But because we're on a really deep path here, I'm going to say, even though my brain was doing me dirty, my genius was still shining through. So if there was a wall of fame for thoroughly planned out suicide attempts, mine would probably be number one. That's definitely something I should be proud of, right? For that, I give thanks to my demons. My brain did try to kill me for months, but that same brain did end up saving my life.
And I am so glad you are here. You are one of my very best friends and confidants. And I genuinely do not know what I would do without you. This is a very real and very scary reality of depression that most people do not want to talk about. However, it is something that needs to be talked about. And the lack of urgency in that hospital and the invasion of privacy has probably turned many people away, not just you. It is just so disheartening to me to know that proper mental health care is not available everywhere. But I am so, so grateful that your sister was able to get the proper care because you are both just lights. And I am so happy to even just know each of you.
Thank you. It really means a lot because everything I went through was telling me otherwise. And I'm really glad that my brain flipped that switch because I got a tattoo of the date that I thought was going to be my very last day alive. And the reason I got that tattoo is because when I look down and see that date, it is a reminder of everything I've been blessed with since that date and the reason probably why my brain flipped immediately and showed me those reasons. So I have that date. So when I look down, I think of everything that has happened in my life that has truly been the biggest blessings. I want to shed light on the very common misconception or statement many of us have probably heard, suicide is selfish. I do have the ability to understand why a person would say that to an extent. But anyone that's made that statement has never been through the kind of darkness that leads to suicide or suicide attempts, and I am almost dead certain on that. However, those of us that have gotten to that point, there is not the slightest amount of selfish intent behind the matter. It is so foolish to think that anyone would do that with the intent of being selfish. When a person gets to the point of believing that suicide is their only way out, their brain has failed to allow them to believe otherwise. For me personally, it came down to the fact that I would never be able to get out from underneath those demons. I will be battling these demons for the rest of my life. And at the point where I thought they'd won the battle, it was a matter of believing that my war was finally coming to an end and that I would be set free, while also knowing my loved ones would grieve my loss, but as time went on, they would find themselves grieving my loss by remembering me at my best and not at my worst. I believed I'd be doing them a favor because they'd no longer have to worry about me. They'd no longer have to see me at my worst, and they'd no longer have to feel my burden, because I was convinced I was a burden to everyone, which was not true for me, and it is not true for you either. If you're watching or listening to this episode and you're in a dark place right now, I hope I was successful in my attempt at delivering the reality behind severe depressive episodes. My intent for this episode was to shed light on the things nobody actually feels safe talking about. I want those of you feeling so much shame, guilt, emptiness, worthlessness, and hopelessness to know that we see you and we hear you. I want you to know that things you've been incapable of doing during your darkest moments aren't things you need to be ashamed of or embarrassed of. When you make it out alive, and if you ever feel comfortable sharing your story, people will be proud of you for being so brave. People will be inspired by your story. Even though I cannot promise you something I am not capable of promising, I can promise you that your life matters. I can promise you that you are not a burden. I can promise you that those people in your life that you love so dearly will not be better off without you. You know better than anyone else, no matter what mental health disorder or disorders you may struggle with, the person you were before being surrounded by so much darkness is still in there. Please believe that it is possible to find that person through the darkness. That person is going to know what you need and when you need it at any given moment. If you feel yourself losing complete control, and you feel yourself losing that war, please have faith that that person behind the darkness is going to keep you from losing to those demons. And trust that whatever help you feel you need in that moment is exactly what you need to seek out immediately. Because your life is worth saving, and you do know that it is.
We cannot reiterate enough how happy we are that you are here and listening. I mean, we do need listeners, right? But jokes aside, the world needs you. Even if the world is just your pets or your friends, you are important and you are needed.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to end this episode by telling you that I will have more resources for you on our website directly relating to what we've discussed during this episode. Tori did provide some statistics that she got from factual resources, and I'm going to tell you right now, those statistics are facts, and you have to trust us on that, because I am not going to have any resources listed on this episode. The resources are already there, and we're here too. We do have to wrap this episode up with some news. This is the final episode. We will not be returning for season 3 as quickly as we returned for season 2. But we will, for a fact, be returning for season 3. We do refuse to be a part of those failed podcast statistics. We will be back to our regular scheduled episode releases, with the first episode of season 3 to be aired on Thursday, December 5th. We're taking a longer break this time due to the holiday season. Also, because we ended season 1 and planned our return date for season 2, then Tori had a lot of unexpected but good life changes take place very suddenly, literally right before she had to jump back into filming season 2 without having any time to process the changes and get settled in. We will be back before Christmas because Tori mentioned it's her favorite holiday. That's my favorite holiday as well. And why wouldn't we give ourselves the opportunity to share our favorite holiday with our audiences? Just as I said at the end of season 1, we will not go on ghost mode. We will still be active on our platforms. We will actively be planning and structuring season 3. We will always be available for communication through our platforms.
I am going to soak in every minute of my newly added family member. We get to experience Thanksgiving and Christmas with him for the first time. And I'm not even going to get emotional about it. But the girls and I always go so overboard, and Ian goes overboard with all of the holidays. He is in for such a treat. Holidays at my house with my family, you know how crazy that is. There is food, fights, food comas, and not in any specific order. But don't worry, the fights are always just everyone beating each other up because my family does not know how to behave. There is always a wrestling match during the holidays in my house, adults and kids. Happy Thanksgiving, lunatics. We cannot wait to see you for Christmas.
I am so truly, truly happy that this year you get to bring that experience with your family to your newest son. And though I know your family is crazy, I would love to be a part of your holiday. I would love it because I've seen your videos of these fights and not
it's
fights,
something.
But you know,
it's always something.
And, you know, all of that. And he is going to be lucky, so lucky. And you are so amazing for you and Ian both are so amazing because of what you are going to be, what you have been able to bring him and what you will continue to bring him. And it is okay that you're emotional about this. Totally okay. I am too. I'm just on some new medications. So that may be the only reason I'm not crying. I'm experiencing some very crazy, side effects here, so.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your side effects, your jokes.
I'm crying in my brain.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. So welcome. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you lunatics from me as well. If you've survived another day at war with your brain, you are superior. We are wishing you nothing but peace in your soul, your mind, and another day of surviving until you can find your way of living.
And we will see all of you lunatics for season 3 beginning on December 5th on the Trigger Warning Podcast.
solidified that I was correct.
You're welcome.
Don't do that shit to me. Don't do that shit to me, because at this point
I slipped my head on my microphone. Can you just break up with me already?
Yeah, we're getting there. But I swear to God, somebody spoke in my ear and said, I'm going to stop recording here and start recording again. Somebody said it. I was like, I hope from the new medication.
Did you enjoy my note about us breaking up?
I actually didn't get to read just about anything that you put in there. So was that at the end? Yeah, it's great.
My hair is stuck, yeah.
I was able to track the scanning of that QR code once for free, and I seen 26 scans.
I will text you back, I promise.
Ow!